If I've been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
This is Dr. Rob Stahl. What should you expect at your age? A heck of a lot. I have with me today Dr. James Marshall, Chair of the Department of Cancer Prevention and Population Sciences at Roswell Park Cancer Institute. Also in the studio today is Ms. Gretchen Loeffler, the Regional VP for the Western New York Chapter of the American Cancer Society. They are both expert in cancer prevention and care, which is the topic of today's show. I want to also give you right away the main patient contact number for Roswell Park Cancer Institute, which is 877-275-7724. Welcome, Dr. Marshall, Ms. Loeffler.
Thanks very much.
Why don't you each describe a little bit about your professional backgrounds and your current responsibilities?
I finished my PhD at the University of California, Los Angeles in 1977. My first job was at the State University of New York in that same year. So I was at UB for 3 years in the social department, and then I transferred over to the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine in the School of Medicine, received tenure there, and was there until 1996. My interest during all that time was the association between dietary practice and cancer. That was really the emphasis of my work. And then in 1996, I moved to the Arizona Cancer Center as Associate Director for Cancer Prevention and Control. And then I was, at that point, invited to come back to Roswell Park as Senior Vice President for Cancer Prevention and Population Science.
Ms. Loeffler.
Well, my background is not quite as wonderful as Dr. Marshall's. I basically am a lay educator by degree and started
Does
working
that mean a teacher?
A teacher, yes.
Well, teachers are very important.
Oh, it's
in
very
this
important,
world.
But really only taught for a couple of years and then got into working with the Niagara County Council of Girl Scouts doing marketing and public relations and came over to the American Cancer Society simply as just a change in career path. And, of course, have been with the organization now for almost 24 years, being the executive director in Niagara County for 12 years and then up in Buffalo for the rest of my tenure. My focus really is the mission of the American Cancer Society for cancer education as far as prevention and early detection of cancer, and then we do patient and family services for anybody who's affected by cancer.
I know much of what I do as a physician and geriatrician is also teaching and educating. That's why this show is very exciting, and especially talking about cancer and how we can prevent such a very difficult disease. Can you tell me if there are any personal experiences that you've had that have molded the way you look at cancer in general?
Well, you know, I think in my particular case, it's interesting. I came from the generation I'm in my 50s, but, you know, grew up at a time when your older relatives didn't talk about cancer. A lot of times they were not appropriately diagnosed. I think if anything I would like to have come out of this show today is just to encourage, individuals and their families to talk about cancer. Family history is critically important in many of the major cancers.
And you, Dr. Marshall, any personal experiences, family members, even yourself?
Or? Well, the person who's had no family members affected or has had no contact with cancer at all is a pretty rare person. We all have had contact with it. I have a father-in-law who is struggling with cancer right now. I have a mother-in-law who died of it. The focus of my career to date has been on public health and what we can do to give each person who's alive the best chance to have a long and healthy life. That's been a goal of mine.
If everyone did everything they could to prevent cancer, how would that 25% number change?
Well, you know, it might not change a great deal, because none of us is going to get out of here alive. And as we get older and older, at certain points, the risks associated with every disease go up sizably. There are certain cancers that really should not occur. For example, and the best example is lung cancer. 1916, there was an announcement went out. They were going to do a postmortem, an autopsy, on a man who had died of a disease that was so rare that none of the medical students, none of the doctors, none of the residents could ever expect to see another case in their lifetime.
Mm.
The disease was lung cancer.
Mm.
And what happened was that at that point, as our soldiers were going to Europe, they were learning to smoke pre-rolled cigarettes. So beginning in about 1920, the lung cancer rate began to creep up, and it got to the point where by the 1950s, there were 50,000 people in the United States dying every year of lung cancer alone.
Well, this is just an aside, but my own personal perspective is we try to do elimination of illegal drugs for the potential harm to society and individuals when legal drugs are the ones that are killing the most of us, and that being tobacco.
If we would think about it for a moment, if somebody today in 2004 invented this new practice of sucking on, lighting cigarettes and sucking on the smoke and inhaling it and so on and so forth, it would never be legalized.
When was the first association between smoking and lung cancer made?
In 1948.
What about cancer in general? Was it Egyptian times? When was cancer first recognized as an entity?
The recognition of cancer as the uncontrolled growth of cells and of tissue goes back to antiquity. I believe the first mastectomy, for example, was done in the 19th century. It turns out that there actually is not a great epidemic. The only cancers that have really skyrocketed in the last 75 years are the smoking-induced cancers.
Hmm.
Apart from those, cancer rates, cancer of the stomach, cancer of the uterine cervix are actually decreasing, and cancer of the stomach used to be a major killer in the United States.
Now, cancer, a brief definition, uncontrolled growth of cells, but there are masses that develop, people get lumps and bumps that aren't cancers. So explain the difference, and then we can go on from there.
The definition, uncontrolled growth of cells. Now, in some cases, there are benign neoplasms which don't invade. At some points, as there's been this replication going on, the control mechanisms in the cells become damaged. They colonize other tissues, and so if they start in the lungs, they may break loose and go to
other
tissues.
They can break loose, go through the bloodstream, other mechanisms, and get to other parts of the body, and that's called metastasizing. And people have heard about metastatic cancer as opposed to localized cancer. So what is the scope? What are the most common cancers and that people have to deal with?
Well, the big four cancers that the American Cancer Society has been concentrating on include, obviously, lung, breast cancer, which is the number two cancer killer of women in this country, colorectal cancer, and we're going to be doing a lot more educating and trying to increase the screening numbers in colorectal cancer, and then prostate cancer for men. And as Dr. Marshall had indicated before, particularly with prostate cancer, if a man lives, you know, long enough, he probably will develop some type of prostate cancer, but then the question becomes, you know, will it be, in fact, what takes his life? And generally the answer to that would be no. Of course, early detection for all of these cancers makes the difference in what your treatment and your outcomes can be.
And it's been found on autopsies of older men that mm-hmm. most have cancer cells in the prostate.
Yeah.
Now, skin cancer also is probably the most common cancer, but that certainly isn't the cancer that kills people.
Well, you know, it is the most common cancer, and that is one disease. I think we do have an epidemic of skin cancer in this country. Again, most of it can be preventable. You know, we look at three different kinds of skin cancer, basal cell and squamous cell being, you know, non-life-threatening generally, but the melanoma certainly is very lethal. Again, early detection for that type of cancer is imperative.
How does cancer and the prevention of cancer change when you're talking about an older population?
I think the growing perception is we want to always be thinking preventively. The interesting thing is that at no point, until you get to be about 115, at no point can you say conclusively that a person's life is really likely to be over. For every year you live, your life expectancy goes down a little bit, but not by a year. So I think if we take the big cancers, do we want to do colonoscopies on people who are 90 years old? Maybe not. But we want to keep an eye on how they're doing.
And this is important. And it's not just long life, but it's also quality of life that gets involved. I've had several patients who were well up in age, 80s into 90s, who have developed lumps in their breast. What do you do about it? Do you just forget it and see how it goes? And I recommend no. You know, they should get it evaluated, and mainly for what might be down the road, to prevent the growth, the metastasis, and I'll be somewhat graphic, the local erosion and pain and suffering that a breast cancer will turn into if it's untreated.
It's imperative that a woman have that annual examined by the doctor. He's trained. He knows what he's looking for and how, you know, because it's not just a solid mass that may present itself. You know, there's something that we know with the diet and physical activity. There's a lot of promotion out there to, you know, change the diet. And this isn't just the Strive for Five we've been talking about for the last 10 years. This is real implementation of changing, you know, having a low-fat, high-fiber diet in conjunction with having your regular colorectal checkups after the age of 50.
What's the Strive for Five? Why don't you just
We want people to eat, you know, more fresh fruits and vegetables every day.
Okay.
So it's five servings, you know, during the course of the day. And it's just been, that's from the, you know, nutrition experts have come out with that. And the American Cancer Society as well has promoted eating low-fat, high-fiber food, eating a wide variety of food, not cooking your food down until it's mush, you know, the broccoli and cauliflower, increasing the amount of cruciferous vegetables that you eat. And certainly if you eat a good balanced diet, you know, a good sense of physical activity in your life, not having a sedentary lifestyle, that again is reducing your risk to a certain degree for the cancers such as breast and colon and some other cancers.
If you take the big four cancers, lung, colon, prostate, breast, there's something we can do to minimize our vulnerability to all of those. Cigarette smoking is the biggest single cause of cancer, and without it, there would be no lung cancer. Cancer of the prostate, cancer of the breast, cancer of the colon, we can decrease our vulnerability to all of those a great deal by appropriate screening. Talking to your physician about what you can do is very important. By definition, cancer is something that's invasive. It's not going to go away. And so if a person suspects that he or she has something irregular that's growing and going wrong, There's no point in delaying. You need to have that looked at. And it may be that the doctor will say, well, we don't need to worry about this for now. But clearly, you want to get an expert opinion on that.
You know, I'd like to make a comment about the lung cancer, because I think for many people, especially people over 55 or 60, that say, well, you know, I've been smoking so long, the damage is done, there's nothing I can do. And I think they really need to understand that from the moment you quit smoking, your body actually will begin to heal itself, you know, with your blood pressure and your everything. You start going, and I don't know all the technical terms, Dr. Marshall can address them better, but there, you know, there is a very positive step. Now, obviously...
And lung disease itself, non-cancer lung disease.
Right.
In and of itself.
And so people shouldn't take that fatalistic, you know, attitude that I've done this too long, the damage is done. It can be reversible to a certain degree. Now, obviously, in some cases, there may be some permanent damage. I'm a former smoker, and even after smoking 20 years and having quit for almost 20 more, I still have some diminished lung capacity. And certainly, you know, I take responsibility for that. But people, you know, I knew that there was so much more to life.
I distinctly remember when I was in my medical training at the VA. I was on an elevator with one of the veterans that was an inpatient there. He was hooked up to IV chemotherapy for lung cancer. And out of his tracheostomy, he was smoking a cigarette. And I talked to him. He plugged up the hole, and we spoke a little bit. And I asked him, why are you still smoking? And he says, well, I'm going to stop once I beat this thing.
Well, you know, people need to understand, it is an addiction. You know, we understand it's a physical addiction. Nicotine is one of the most addictive substances that we know. There's a psychological addiction. I think that was part of mine. You know, I used to joke that I went from sucking my thumb to smoking a cigarette, you know, stealing cigarettes from my dad at a very young age. So we understand there's a variety of, you know, there's a habitual addiction. And people, again, can learn and identify what that addiction is and deal with it.
I have a sheet of paper that it's from St. Louis University, and a way to remember possible signs of cancer is a caution. You use the word caution as a mnemonic to remember what to look for. C, a change in bowel or bladder habits. A, a sore that doesn't heal. U, unusual bleeding or discharge. T, thickening or lump in the breast or elsewhere. I, indigestion or difficulty in swallowing. O, obvious change in a wart or a mole. And N, nagging cough or hoarseness. And the importance of this, you may have cancer at this point when you notice these symptoms, but catching it early is very important.
There's a bit of increasing evidence that Americans are too overweight. There was a wonderful study done by the American Cancer, sponsored by the American Cancer Society, that showed modest amounts of being overweight were associated with increased risk, not just of breast cancer and prostate cancer and colon cancer, but also of even lymphoma and leukemia. It was astonishing how widespread the risk associated with obesity is. And we believe that somehow or another diet is related to the fat content of our diet, the animal product content, the vegetable content are related to altered risk. But it's been difficult to document that.
And you mentioned the stigma associated with the diagnosis of cancer. It's like TB used to be years ago, that you hid it. You didn't tell anyone about it. But the most important thing in taking care of someone with cancer is that they don't get isolated, that they don't hide, and that people who have friends that have cancer don't shy away and disappear because they don't know how to talk to the person. They don't know what to say.
Well, again, we have brochures. It's, you know, how to talk to your coworker, how to talk to your children, your family. You know, we have specialized brochures for each of those situations. It's unfortunate when a celebrity is diagnosed, but I'm sure Roswell experiences the same spike in calls when, you know, somebody is diagnosed. It's in the public eye because they say, well, gee, if it can happen to them, it could happen to me. But, you know, we're all celebrities in our own family, and we need to engage that, you know, that theme to say I'm important and I'm doing this for my family, for my spouse, but for myself.
And then just one parting word about people that have cancer and it progresses. You really should not have to suffer or not expect to suffer. And there's a lot that can be done to control pain, to control other symptoms that go along with cancer. We're going to wrap up now. Thanks so much, Dr. Marshall and Gretchen Loeffler, for joining me today. Great information, and I hope listeners make good use of it.
Pleasure, Rob.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Rob Stahl. See you next week.
Many years from now.